America, from the deserts to the sea, from the mountains to the snow, you are tuned in to the Johnny Punish Show, produced by the Veterans Today Network and BTN Radio, brought to you by HireVeterans.com, America's job board for U.S. veterans. Let's get this show rockin'!
Spent all my years fighting for a place in the sun, and I hit the ground running.
This is VT Radio on the Veterans Today Network with Sammy Jadullah, right?
Yes.
Fantastic. Sammy is a writer on VT, veteranstoday.com. He's also a retired U.S. Marine. Is that correct, Sammy?
No, U.S. Army.
U.S. Army. I apologize. Excuse me. That's not good, is it? Okay. Also, on your biography, you've done a lot of things. I see that you've got a Juris Doctor. Is that correct?
Correct, yes.
Tell our listeners about yourself.
Well, I was born in Palestine and immigrated to the U.S. in 1962 at the age of 15. Attended high school in Gary, Indiana. And served in the military, and after the military, I attended Indiana University, where I got my bachelor's degree, my master's degree from the School of Public and Environmental Affairs, and got my Juris Doctor from Indiana, and then I went on to New York. I worked for a Wall Street law firm for 3 years, and then I moved to Saudi Arabia, where I was the general counsel for a construction company with 8,000 people. Left that after 4 years, went to Geneva, Switzerland, lived there for about 6 years, and came back to the States. And then I continued to commute between Washington and Europe and the Middle East.
Wow. Okay, so that's a pretty extensive resume. Fantastic. So would you basically consider yourself a global aware person, being that you've been around the world and done a lot of things?
Yes, yeah, I would say so. And I really think that I became more of a peace activist since the Vietnam War.
Wow, okay. Did you actually serve in any wars?
Hmm?
Did you actually serve in war?
No, I didn't. I served in Arizona and in Louisiana and New Jersey.
Okay. And so, you're in the U.S. Army. What exactly did you do in the U.S. Army?
Well, I was in the intelligence signal corps.
Okay, perfect. Okay. All right. Well, now that our listeners have figured out who they're speaking to, Sammy, you've got a lot of things going on. You've written me today about your Arab Peace Corps initiative that you're out there giving, promoting and getting started. Tell us all about the Arab Peace Corps.
Well, my the idea really was inspired by the America Peace Corps. And I think that there are two great things about America. One is the Peace Corps, and the other one is the Fulbright Scholarship. Mm-hmm. And the American Peace Corps, you know, we have about 220,000 alumni who served in 160 countries. And mm-hmm. I think that these people did more good for America and the world than all the bombs and all the planes and all the rockets and all the nuclear bombs that we muster and have.
I agree. And I believe Peace Corps was started by Sergeant Shriver. Is that correct?
Yes. In fact, I'll tell you, very interesting that it started by the Mennonite community of Harrisonburg, Virginia.
Wow. Okay,
they
didn't know
that. They were the pioneers in the Peace Corps, and when the late President John Kennedy read about it, he sent Sergeant Shriver to Harrisonburg, where he met with a group of Mennonites in Harrisonburg, and they told him all about their work that they do around the world. And that inspired the President John Kennedy to sponsor the program. And, you know, since that time, in 1961, it really became the landmark of America's generosity to the world.
It sounds like that was a very big inspirational time for you that got under your skin.
Yes. And you know, I wrote an article about it, America the Great, not too long ago. And I mentioned the fact that the America Peace Corps and the Fulbright Scholarship were really the great success story of the American foreign policy. And I also mentioned the fact that in the old days, I remember the first picture I ever had was a clothes from the care package that came to Palestine immediately after the 1948 war.
Wow.
And I still cherish that. And I always think, you know, well, how did it happen that America replaced the care package to the Arab with bombs?
Yeah, that makes you want to cry. I mean, that makes me sad hearing that, because it is so inspirational that some of the American work is done in such good faith. And then next thing you know, it's not working out with the bombs and things that we see in the Middle East today.
Yeah, I mean, this is, you know, the American foreign policy has been hijacked since 1967. And unfortunately, you know, we have lost a lot of good people to the wars. And I think it's time to make peace an agenda for us and for the world.
Yeah, I think we've missed so much opportunity with the terrible influence that warmongers actually have in Washington. We need to put an end to that.
You remind me, I tell you, you see them every day here in Washington, you know?
Yeah, no kidding, right?
Washington, and I can't tell you.
Well, I want to discuss that with you, but first I want to hear more about your Arab Peace Corps initiative, and tell me exactly what it is, where are you going to go with it, when you're going to launch it, what's happening. Let's go with that.
Okay. Well, like I said, the Arab Peace Corps is inspired by the America Peace Corps, and my idea is to challenge the jihadists and to challenge the warmonger, even in the Arab world and the Muslim world, for a peace corps, you know? We have so many war corps, but we don't have many peace corps. And as such, my idea is to recruit young, committed, energetic, talented, smart, exceptional young people from the Arab world and from the States, from Europe, from New Zealand, from Australia, who are originally from the Arab world, to be volunteers for a 2-year program to serve in certain designated areas in the Arab country, to provide education, health services, community building, peace building, youth training program, agriculture, irrigation, and other services to really abandon communities, and there are many. And my idea is to set up an office in Morocco, maybe, or Tunisia, as a local office to cover North Africa, and one maybe in Jordan or Lebanon to cover the Middle East. And my plan is to launch the project in August of 2015, with the intention to raise $100 million as a trust fund to maintain the program and to allow us to dispatch about maybe 5,000 volunteers to serve in locations around the world, around the Arab countries. And my thinking is that once these people finish the program, that they will be given a full scholarship for a master's degree program as a recognition of their contribution, at the same time that they will be given priority for jobs by corporations and by governments. So it's a very, very ambitious project. And so far, from the people that I introduced the idea to here in the States and overseas, everybody loves the project, because it's innovative and it's challenging, and I think that we can win the peace in the Middle East with it.
Well, I agree with you. I think that's an amazing idea and an amazing program. I definitely want to be part of it and share it with listeners, and anything I can do to promote and help it for everybody. I mean, I want to see this happen. We need this to happen for everybody, Jewish, Christian, Muslim, Americans, everybody around the world is praying and hoping for peace in the Middle East. We're all sick of this.
Yes, I agree. You know, and you know, Johnny, the New Arab Foundation, which the organization that I founded and I was able to secure the tax exemption status for us as a 501c3. If you see the front page of the website, it say that the Arab world is more than Arab. The Arab world is Arab, Amazigh, and you know there are 70 million Berber in North Africa.
Of course.
And many people don't know that. So the Arab world is not only Arab. The Arab world is Arab. The Arab world is Kurds. The Arab world is Armenian. The Arab world is Circassian. The Arab world is Berber. And the Arab world is more than Muslim. The Arab world is Christians and Jews.
Absolutely.
And don't forget, the Palestinians are the original Christians in the world, before even Rome.
That is amazing. Yes, absolutely. And the whole point is that we're all human beings, and nobody's better than anybody else. And we all bleed red. We don't bleed different colors. And I think we're all sick and tired of this. Everybody is. We want to have a future for our children, whether they're Jewish, Christian, Muslim. I could tell you from my personal experience, Sammy, I think I told you this before. My mother is born in Haifa.
Yes, I know that. Yeah.
Okay. And I remember telling her when I was a little kid, I said, because I was naive, I didn't know anything about the problems. I just heard there was problems with Jewish people, Christians, and Muslims. I didn't know anything about it. I said, Mom, what if I fall in love with a Jewish girl? Can I marry her? And my mom said, let me tell you a story, son. In Haifa, when I was a girl, across the street was a Jewish girl. And then there was across the street was a Muslim girl. And you know what? We all played together. You see, we don't hate each other. We're all friends. And if you fall in love with a Jewish girl, absolutely you can marry her, because it's about love and it's about peace and it's about friendship. All this other stuff is brought on by politics and people that are greedy and other things that have nothing to do with the regular people. And it's sad to hear and see all the negative animosities that go on in those communities that are brought from outside groups. And it's sad.
Well, you know, Johnny, I think that you are absolutely right. And the thing about it, that if we can just only see the other people as human and not to demonize anyone,
absolutely,
I think that we can start the peace process.
Yeah, I always tell people when they refer to me as anti-Semite, when I criticize the policies of the state of Israel, I remind them that, excuse me, my mother's a Semite. All Arabs are Semites, and I'm getting sick and tired of being called an anti-Semite. I'm not anti-Jewish, anti-anything. I'm pro-human, and we need to become pro-something instead of anti-something. And if we can all agree that we're all pro-human, then it's easy to recognize the other human being in the room.
Well, you know, the accusation of the anti-Semitism is really a form of harassment and to stifle free speech and to give Israel off the hook for all its crimes that it committed in Gaza recently. So the thing about that, you know, criticizing Israel is definitely a free speech, and even it can be offensive, it can be vulgar, but still a free speech, and it has nothing to do with anti-Semitism at all. Okay, because more than 50% of the Israelis are not even Semites.
That's right. I agree with that. Yeah, it's amazing. But you know what? Someone said to me, as a Palestinian in the diaspora, would you like to kick all the Jews out of Israel? And I keep telling them, where are you coming from? Why would you say that? There's been people born there for 100 years. There's been Jews from Europe that have been living there 100 years. Look, I can't go back 100 years ago. I can only tell you that I don't want to see another child hurt from violence. And if someone's been born there, it's all of our land. It is the holy land for all of us. And we cannot kill a Jewish kid, kill a Christian kid or a Muslim kid, and call ourselves legitimate. We can't be. We can't do that.
You know, Johnny, you could not make two wrongs a right. So the thing about it that, you know, these people who are now in Israel, it is their home now too,
yes,
as well as it's the Palestinian home. So the only thing forward, I think, in my opinion, is a one state. One state for all of its citizens, equal citizenship. And I can tell you, I probably would choose a Jewish candidate before I choose an Arab candidate, because they are good people and who can serve well the citizenship. So as such, I think that You know, I worked in Morocco for many years, and I continue to, I dealt with Israeli people, I dealt with Jewish people, and, you know, I know many of them. And the thing about that, the Arab world was perhaps a haven for the Jews for centuries. I mean, if you look at Spain, if you look at the Umayyad Empire, if you look at the Abbasid, if you look at Egypt, you know, Jews flourished this right here. The persecution of Jews was not a Muslim phenomena. It was really a European phenomena. And as such now, you know, the Arabs and the Muslims are looking bad because, you know, they want us to look bad, when in fact, we didn't commit the crime that the European committed against the Jews.
Absolutely. And I always remind people that. I always tell people, how many Palestinians actually gassed a European Jew in Germany? And the answer is none. So what are we talking about here? Okay, so let's get that straight. It's unfortunate. But here we are today. What I do want to talk about is not the past, but the future.
Yes.
I want to ask you a question about what you see is the future of the Middle East. I'm talking 10 years from now, 20, 50, and even 100. Kind of give me your impression of what you think it can be.
Well, I wish I had the magic wand, you know, because unfortunately, the Arab Spring turned to be an Arab winter because the deep state took over, you know. And unfortunately, what happened in Libya, what happened in Syria, what happened in Egypt, what happened in Sudan or Yemen was the, you know, the, I always say that there is inevitable price, a heavy price of dictatorship. And unfortunately, the Arab countries did not have the intellectual leadership or the political leadership that is committed to overcome all the ills of the past and to make a new state, to make a dynamic state of the future. A state for all its citizens, you know, free from mukhabarat, free from oppression, free from corruptions and looting, where people can really exercise a semblance of tranquility and hope. And unless the Arab world develop a new mentality, one of, you know, forget about being a Islamist or a secularist. You have to be committed to citizenship. This is what's really the conflict in the Middle East now is all about. It's between the neoliberal or the secular versus the Islamist. And Tunisia is perhaps a shining light on what happened or what could happen in the Middle East, where the Islamist party recognized that it could not win the majority of the votes, and as such, it did not wield a candidate for the presidency. And now they have a joint government. And I think that Tunisian experience is something good to look at. If you look at Libya, you know, after Gaddafi, after the many years of Gaddafi's rule and the corruptions and the looting and the oppression, you know, the West came to help, but the West did not really came to help. They came to destroy what is there. And unfortunately, the Libyans did not really rise to the occasion. And they, you know, to try to organize and build a modern state. The same thing with Iraq. The American came to Iraq to destroy it, not to rebuild it or not to get rid of dictatorship, but to really break it apart. And unfortunately, those Iraqis who came with the American troops did not really build or contribute to the building of a state for all of its citizenship, given the fact that Iraq is not only an Arab country, it is also Kurds, and it's a, you know, it's a Muslim country with a Christian, a large Christian population. So as such, you know, there is really a big failing in the Middle East, and I hope that there will be this kind of a new leadership that is not beholden to the past, that can take the lead. You know, if you look at Europe, there were some, you know, I mean, the breakup of Czechoslovakia took place peacefully. The reunification of Germany was peacefully. In Poland and other places. I mean, you know, the Arabs have a lot to learn. And I think that the Arab leadership is at fault. True, there is a lot of conspiracy. There is a lot of ill feeling or perhaps evil objective from the West toward the Arab world. But at the same time is that if the Arab leadership could resist this right here and try to build a democratic society, I really think that there is a lot of future. And I think I hope that the new Arab Foundation and the Arab Peace Corps will contribute to building such leadership. It may take years, frankly speaking, you know. I mean, if you look at Yemen now, what's happening in Yemen, if you look at what's happening in Libya, if you look what's happening in Iraq, it's not only the because of the West, but also, I know, a shortcoming from the people themselves. So they did not really invest in building democratic institutions, whether in Iraq, whether it's in Libya, whether it's in Egypt or Syria or Yemen or anywhere else. No?
Well, what is the obstacle for not building democratic institutions? What is the actual obstacle?
Well, you know, I think that ideology, I think that unfortunately there is a lot of personal interest. I think the ideological conflict between the secularists and the Islamists is a hindrance to any progress to be made. You know, if you look at Egypt, if you look at the conflict in Libya, is a good model. The same thing with Syria, you know, the conflict in Iraq is really sectarian, and it is pushed by the or promoted by the religious establishment, frankly speaking, and the political establishment. You know, I mean, you know, I'm a Muslim, and I never thought of myself being a Sunni or Shiite, because in the Holy Quran there is nothing about Sunni or Shiite. Muslim are Muslims, so as such that. This, what I would call a tribal fight between the Umayyad and the Bani Hashim that took place about 1,400 years ago, it's the past. Now we have to look for the future. The country has to be a country for all of its people, equal rights.
Okay, so here's my interesting idea. You may have heard of it, you may have not, but I want to propose it to you. I know it's planting a seed, and it's way out there, and it is way out there. But in the late 1990s, we saw the creation of the European Union. Now, we've had a lot of complaints about it, this or that. But if you've obviously you've traveled through Europe back in those days, different passports, different money. It was really difficult to do business. A lot of things were not perfect, and so they created this thing called the European Union. Now, what if we had a Middle East Union, a place where there was freedom for all, liberty and justice for all, governed by those kind of values that protected freedom of religion, instead of having all these Sykes-Picot World War I states created for the greed of the West and the bankers, whether the French or whether they were the English or what have you, and now the Americans. We need to change the whole paradigm. And here's my hope, Sammy. I talk to a lot of young people, a lot of young Arabs, a lot of young Jews, Christian, Muslims. And in the younger group, under 30, I don't hear those animosities of the past. What I hear is connection. What I see is young people on Facebook talking to each other. There's a lot of connections that are going on that the older folks either don't see, don't acknowledge, or are not paying attention to. And so what I think the future, now hopefully you and I will make it there, but if not, at the very least our grandchildren will. I believe that we can have a whole new Middle East that's completely different than the Sykes-Picot invention. That's an absolute abject failure. and we need to declare it a failure. It is exactly what it is. What do you think?
It is, I tell you. I mean, Johnny, I lived in Europe for about 6.5 years. And I traveled extensively in Germany and also in France. And I lived in Switzerland. And if you think that Germany and France went through two wars, big wars. I mean, Germany was completely destroyed. And yet, you know, Adenauer and Charles de Gaulle, a great statement, they decided that time to put an end to this animosity. And the interesting thing is that the birth of the European Union came out of the partnership between France and Germany. And now you can see it's almost about 30 different countries. And it's a very, very powerful community. And
isn't 500 million people, is that correct?
Why is it that the Arab world is a failure? Because we lack the kind of leadership that Europe had. You know, we lack the Charles de Gaulle. We lack the Adenauer of Germany. You know, we don't have this kind of leadership. This is the biggest problem in the Middle East.
Well, what do we have then? Who is in the Middle East right now that has a bigger vision of just this ridiculous situation that we have?
And none whatsoever.
There's not one leader standing there.
I don't think so, you know. I mean, unfortunately, we were hoping that there would be some leaders who will arise from the ashes and to have a vision, you know, for the future. But so far, I don't see any.
Well, that's disappointing. It doesn't mean they won't exist. And it doesn't mean that someone who's 20 years old right now, somewhere, whether they're in Israel, Palestine, Iraq, or wherever, there's somebody there. There's got to be somebody.
It has to happen, you know. I mean, Johnny, it will happen sooner than later. Okay? And I think that, you know, I mean, if you look at countries that went through civil war, if France went through a big civil war that cost the life of about 28,000 people immediately after the French Revolution, the United States went through a civil war for about 6 years that cost the life of about 600,000. The Soviet Union went through a civil war that cost the life of about 25 million people. China, the same thing. So the Arab world is going through this process. But the Arab world need a leader. They need a leadership.
Wow. Well,
that can really take advantage of the chaos and try to give people a vision of what the future can be like.
Well, I volunteer as first president of the Middle East Union. Would you elect me?
Of course I will.
Well, if you do, I promise to do good, care about every citizen, and build bridges and not bombs.
We need, I tell you, Johnny, I always loved your writing because you always spoke about building bridges, you know, among Jews and Christians and Muslims. And I'm committed to that, too. I think that we are here on earth as human being, and we are the creatures of God. And I think that, you know, there should be no distinction based on race, color, creed, or national origin or faith.
Isn't that what a lot of the American values are, from Thomas Jefferson or Martin Luther King, Abraham Lincoln?
Yes, yes, yes. And we need, you know, in this country, we need to remember these values. Yes. Unfortunately, in the last maybe 2 decades, we have lost this right here. We have lost the faith in ourselves. You know, we became Democrat, Republican, left and right. We became black. We became white. We became brown. We became Muslim. We became Jews. We became Christians, the country is divided.
That's terrible.
Which is unfortunately.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of countries around the world that are actually excelling in democracy and doing a much better job. I just saw a thing, I can't remember if it was on TV or some YouTube channel or something, but a lot of countries, even like Estonia, has like online voting. And people are actually going past the United States and showing the United States, hey, look what we're doing, which is a lot better to you. You're stuck in the mud.
Well, you know, the thing about it that, don't forget that in Estonia, okay, they don't have the color problem. They don't have the black and white issue. Here in this country, there is an issue, and that's why they require many states, they require so many documents and so many papers and so many this and that, you know, because they want to disenfranchise some group from voting.
That's terrible.
This is really what's happening. You know, I mean, when you look at this country, it's really a great country because of the leadership of the past, not the leaders of the present.
That's
right. If you look at the, you know, the leadership we have in the states now, I mean, who want these people to be a president? I mean, couldn't a country of 350 million people, you know, muster better candidate than what we have now in the Republican Party or the Democratic Party? It's
well,
unbelievable.
I think the system basically is really broken. I mean, we have so much money flowing.
I tell you, we really don't have democracy. You know, we have money politics. That's all.
You know, in Britain, they allow, I think they just had an election. I believe 6 weeks was the maximum allowed to campaign, and $30 million was the maximum per candidate.
That's England. You know what I mean? Look at England. You look at France. You look at England. You look at France. You don't have a two-year campaign for the presidency. You don't have, you know, in this country, I did the research on it, and I wrote an article about it. In 2012, $6.2 billion was the cost of the election, the president and the congressional and the local elections. Could you imagine that?
That's unbelievable. You know, and Sammy, that's why we are talking about the Middle East and the future Middle East. America needs to take care of itself. And that's my opinion. It needs to fix its own house instead of involving itself in every single thing in the Middle East that they can't control, and they're wasting tax dollars money, and it's unsuccessful, and instead empower the citizens of the Middle East, all of them, to fix it themselves. And when I think that when you put that kind of pressure on the citizens, they have to compromise, or they kill each other off.
They have no choice but to compromise. Leave them alone. Leave them alone. Let them solve their own problem.
I agree.
You know,
as an American citizen, I absolutely agree.
I mean, if you look at, you know, when we left Central America, they're much better off than when we were there. You know, when we were in Central America, you know, I don't know how many, maybe 600,000-700,000 people died because of us. Okay? We made a big mess out of Latin America, in Chile, in Brazil, in Argentina, and other places. Everywhere we went, we made a mess. And only when we left the people alone, they're better off. If you look at what happened in Southeast Asia, once we took our nose out of the Southeast Asia, you know, Singapore is much better off. Vietnam is much better off. Malaysia is much better off. We need to do the same thing in the Middle East. As long as we are in the Middle East, and we are there for, I don't know, for what kind of damn reason, you know?
For the wrong reasons. For making money for the warmongers. We know that.
Well, I mean, yeah. I mean, America has been in perpetual war for almost all of its history.
Okay, so here's one of my ideas. We need to change public opinion. I got this great idea. I'm going to make a petition online, and I want to change the name of the Defense Department back to the War Department. Because I want every American to know what their job is.
Yes. It should be the War Department, because
it's what it is.
Really a Defense Department. It's really a War Department.
I mean, you can call it the Offense Department, but I like the War Department better. That's what it used to be called in World War II, I believe.
Yes, this was the War Department, you know, till James Forrestal became the Secretary of State under the Truman administration, and it was changed into the Defense Department. But it was the War Department.
And that's, to me, that's part of changing public awareness, is that we need to understand as a public that we have our number one business in the United States is selling war items. And if there isn't war, then certain segments of the economy are not making money. And so those people are the ones in Washington that are making wars all over the place because They go to Yemen. They drop bombs. Someone's making a lot of money. You know, Sammy, I have a friend, and I can't mention his name, but unless I have his permission, he's a U.S. Army Special Forces. He actually was the first person to interrogate Saddam Hussein in the cell. He pulled him out of the hole, by the way. And, of course, he speaks fluent Arabic. He's born in the Arab countries. And by the way, he's Muslim, just so you know. So Americans listening to this, there was a Muslim that actually interrogated Saddam and pulled him out of the hole. So I know you don't get the true story, but I have the absolute inside story because this guy is a personal friend of mine from college. I've known him for 30 years. Okay, believe me. Okay, but my point is, sadly, after the war, when he got out, he stayed in Jordan, and he's making, sadly, ridiculous amounts of money being a peddler between the United States State Department, and other countries peddling arms, and they're making so much money. And this is part of the problem, Sammy. The money is too big.
Yeah, well, you know, Johnny, I tell you, I mean, the war business is a big business, but at the same time is that the peace business can be even bigger.
Because really? With the peace... Explain that to me.
Okay, I'll tell you. You know, we spend billions of dollars on war. We drop bombs, you know, I mean, we drop, you know, the jets now. The F-35 costs about $80 million or $100 million. The F-16 costs about maybe $25, $30 million. But I tell you, if we shifted all the money into peace building, you could imagine the highways we can build, the schools we can build, the refrigerator we can sell, the furniture we can sell, the computer that we can sell, the air conditioning we can sell, the school books we can sell. I tell you,
You mean act like China? Go out and export business everywhere.
Exactly. You know, I mean... Look at China. Look at China. It just, in maybe 20 years, it became a superpower with its trade, not with its arms.
Yeah, okay. That's exactly true.
China
Absolutely.
Is not involved in selling arms, you know, as the United States. And they are making a ton of money. I mean, we are, you know, the Chinese, I always say that the thanks to Walmart, the Chinese or the Walmart made the American people, millions of American people shop at Walmart. When in fact, Walmart made the Chinese shop at Saks Fifth Avenue and at Neiman Marcus and Rodeo Drive and other places, huh?
Crazy, right?
You know, I mean, this is the case. You know?
So, Sammy, 60 Minutes yesterday had a little show on Pittsburgh, and they were explaining the infrastructure destruction in Pittsburgh that I think they said 80% of their bridges were basically failing, and it's a city of bridges, and it's in deep trouble, and there's no money to fix it all. And what you're saying is divert all these war monies and kill the defense industry, the war industry, excuse me, and invest it in America.
Let them shift. I tell you, Johnny, you don't have to put them out of business. You know, like in World War II, they went from car manufacturing to tank manufacturing, right? Well, shift them. Shift them from plane manufacturing to bridge manufacturing. That's all. You don't need to put them out of business. They just can shift their industry into a civil-related industry. They can build houses. I mean, look at Detroit now. You know, I mean, I wrote a comparison between Nagasaki and Detroit. I mean, if you go look to Detroit probably need about maybe $20 billion to, you know, level the city and rebuild it again, okay? So the defense industry can make a lot of money, too, in civilian product. So they don't have, you know, they can easily go out of the killing business into the peace-building business and make money.
Okay, so who are these people that we have to influence to make that paradigm shift in the American economy, thus helping the world build bridges instead of knocking down bombs?
Yeah, I mean, I tell you, I mean, you know, if you go to New York City, I was in New York City not too long ago. I mean, the place is falling apart. You know, one day we will have a major disaster in New York City. Everything is falling apart.
You mean infrastructure? What do you mean?
Well, I tell you, I mean, you know, bridges, roads, buildings, everything is falling apart. The whole country is falling apart. You know, the Midwest, the old cities, they are all falling apart because of the fact that everything was shifted to the war business and not to the civilian infrastructure. Could you imagine a country like ours? We even don't have a TGV. We don't have a fast train. Could you imagine that?
That's sad.
You know, I mean, the French, I was riding the TGV between Paris and Geneva 25 years ago.
Right.
And you look at Japan, you look at China. Every country is really investing in mass transit. We don't, you know?
How do we get the American public? Do you think the American public is aware of this? Or if not, how do we get them to get aware that they're not investing in themselves?
Unfortunately, the American public is a couch potato, mentally and physically, you know? And they could not understand more than a soundbite. When the American public becomes smart and understand public policy, they will change everything. They have the power to change. And as long as they are too lazy to vote, okay? You know,
the American public is one of the lowest, 31st in the world in terms of voting in democracy. They are not the number one voters in the world.
And that's why, you know, all our government, all our presidents have been elected by the minority of the people, of less than 25% of the public, of the citizens of the United States, vote for the president or vote for the Congress. So unless the American public get off its back, its behind, okay, and do something about its community, do something about the job loss, do something about, you know, making America great again in terms of industry, in terms of manufacturing. I was in North Carolina not too long ago, and I tell you, you know, I mean, North Carolina was the furniture capital of the world, right?
Right.
Well, half of the factories are closed. You know that in the last 10 years, we lost about 5 million jobs forever in the manufacturing industry. And we plan to lose more with the free trade agreement. And you know, when you think about it, sooner than later, everybody will be on minimum wage.
Wow. Now, the Democrats and Republicans, is there any sign that you see anywhere?
I don't see a difference between Republican and Democrat. You know, the Democrats are bought by Soros and Saban, and the Republicans are bought by Sheldon Adelson. So, you know, it's not really the public that really counts. It's the money.
So it's basically us against them.
Yeah. I mean, you know, like I said, I really think that we need a third party. We need a third party. And I have proposed this. And I, on this radio show, I proposed a United America Party as a third party. And I think it should be our objective, okay, to get in Congress at least one third of the Congress in the next 6 years.
Wow.
To be a member of the new party, because we need to start with the Congress. You know, get rid of at least one third of the members of Congress with the new party.
Yeah, but you know, Sammy, they're not going to let you in. This one party, two faction system is not going to allow you to come in.
No. I tell you.
You got to fight your way in.
You know, I tell you, Johnny, look, okay, with all the money that these big guys have, in the end, it's our vote that puts these politicians in office. So a candidate can spend $25 million. Do you know that Elizabeth Warren spent $51 million to win her seat in the Senate? Mm-hmm. $51 million. Could you imagine that?
Wow.
So the thing about it that in the end, it's our votes that put these politicians in office. It's not the money. The money may be to lead, you know, into convincing us, the stupid people, to vote for these candidates. But at the same time is that it's our vote that counts in the end.
Okay, so we're going to have an election here in 2016. Do you see anything on the horizon that the American people are going to challenge these Democrats and Republicans and ask them, hey, what are you going to do about America? What are you going to do about the Middle East? Are you going to keep giving us war? Are they going to start challenging these people or just going to keep letting them softball away and giving us nonsense?
I mean, look at the issues now. Is there anybody who's talking about what's happening in this country? Nobody. You know, not Hillary Clinton or not Rubio or not Jeb Bush or from Texas, you know?
Cruz.
I refer to him as
Mr. Haney from Green Acres.
Any issues. Nobody's talking about America health. Nobody's talking about America education. Nobody talk about the infrastructure we have. Nobody talk about the segregation that we have in this country. I mean, you know, a report that came out just about 10 days ago, you know that Singapore is number one in high school education, followed by Hong Kong, mm-hmm. Okay? And England is number 20. The United States is number 28.
Well, that's not number one.
Quality of high school education. Could you imagine that?
That's pathetic.
I mean, we are the most powerful country, and yet we are number 28 in the world in terms of high school education.
Well, I think that can officially we can call that a rape and pillage of the American people. I would say so.
Yeah. I mean, you know, when you think about it, is that, you know, education is not even a right in this country. You know that?
Yeah.
It's not guaranteed by the Constitution. Hmm. And when you think about it, is that the problem with education in this country, the fact that it is based on property tax. So as such, in a poor neighborhood or a poor city or a poor town that has been abandoned, you know, by the government for the industry and so forth, huh? Mm-hmm. You know, it loses its tax base, and as such, the quality of education goes down. So these people become unemployed. They become on welfare. It costs us a lot of money.
Yeah.
To uplift these people.
An uneducated population is extremely costly for the country.
Yes, of course. I mean, look at the prisons. You know, it costs the United States taxpayer about $35,000 to keep one person incarcerated in jail, when in fact the tuition to Harvard is $35,000 a year.
You know, my son is of college age, and he is a very smart young man. He's very intelligent. He's very analytical. He would have been a great candidate to go to college. But you know what? He said to me, Dad, I'm not living in your times. I can't afford to go in debt to $100,000. I refuse to start my life in debt. So here's what I'm going to do. Instead, I'm going to go on the internet and get my own education. And I'm not going to go in debt for 1 cent. That way, when I start my life as an adult, I start free and ready to be successful and contribute instead of pay banksters all day long for the rest of my life. No, thank you. And this is what we're losing. We're losing these opportunities to educate not only an intelligent kid like this, but all Americans' children.
I tell you, education should be free in this country. Education should be free to everybody, because it's the only way it can uplift this nation from the mess that we are in now. Why is it that education in Germany costs less? Why is it in France it costs less? Why is it in England costs less? Because here, the bankster and the gangsters, you know, they put millions of students in debt. And the biggest problem we will face sooner than later, and it will be a big mess, just like the home mortgage, it will be the student loan scandal.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you a question. As it relates, because we're themed here as the future of the Middle East, the American economy, the American involvement in the Middle East, you think it's tied to the warmongers exporting the monies outside for their profits and not investing it in America. Is that correct in saying that?
Well, I tell you, I really think that the U.S. involvement in the Middle East is really the AIPAC and the Israeli lobby. And they are the one who are driving the Middle East policy. And they are the one who are driving the war policy of America against the Middle East. And it's for their own purpose and it's for their own self-interest.
And what is their self-interest, by the way?
They want the Middle East destroyed, okay? And this is their objective. If you look at what happened in Iraq, okay? Though I am against Saddam, I never believe in Saddam. I think that he was a stupid fool, a dictator, and he went to war with Iran for the wrong reason, okay, supported by the Americans and many states, okay? But the same time is that we went to war in Iraq, not because of Saddam, but because of Israel. And we are going to war everywhere. We may go to war against Iran because of Israel. And as long as the AIPAC and the pro-Israeli lobby and the warmonger in Washington decide Middle East policy, America will always be in perpetual war, and our men and girls will die for Israel. And well, this is what we need to stop.
Please explain to me what you believe Israel's objective is. What is it you see based on their actions for their future? What is their vision?
Well, I tell you, I mean, the Middle East policy is really a domestic policy. Okay, Israel is the domestic issue and not a foreign issue. The AIPAC and the pro-Israeli lobby in this country, Israel at peace, it makes no sense for them. Because only when the blood of a Jew and Arab flow, the money flow into the coffers of AIPAC. So with that money, they are able to really control the Congress. They are able to manipulate the Congress. They are able to pass their own agenda for a control of our economy, of our national interest, or our national security. It's the money that keeps such groups in power. And it's not for the love of Israel. I mean, Israel at peace, it's not good for them. It makes no sense. What can they peddle to the American Jewish voter?
No kidding, right?
You know, yeah, matzo ball, or falafel. What can they offer? What they can offer the American Jewish electorate who are very well to do in this country, and they are safe and secure and doing very well, and they are part of the American society, and they are well established in America and everything else.
And they don't want to live in Israel, by the way.
Yes, of course. I mean, you know, this is their home. This is their country.
Actually, I've heard this before, that the promised land for the Jewish people is actually the United States of America, because there's more Jews in the United States than there is in Israel. So let's get real. There is no such thing as a promised land.
They are flourishing. They are flourishing here and in France and everywhere else.
Yes, okay? As they should be.
Israel is scraping the barrel, okay? In going to India and Ethiopia looking for the lost stripes. Because they could not get the American Jews or the French Jews to immigrate.
Right? Nobody wants to go there.
The Israel is a domestic policy, okay? And Israel at peace is not in their agenda.
Right.
So Israel do you think that the is what makes them money.
The actual leaders of AIPAC and Zionism, they're in it for global control of resources, global control of things?
Yes. I mean, you know, this is where this is how they are able to use the money. You know, if you look at the last article I wrote, the number of candidates who receive, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars from AIPAC or, you know, AIPAC associate organizations. You know, one head of AIPAC some years ago, he said that he can present a resolution on a napkin and 80 senators will approve it. It's a good thing he didn't say that he can present a congressional resolution on toilet paper and 80 senators will vote on it.
That's true. I mean,
can you imagine how insulting?
Yeah, how off. I'm laughing because it is comedic, because it's funny, because it's real, and it's sad.
Yes, it's real, and it happened. It happened. I mean, It's documented very well.
Well, we saw the Patriot Act get voted on. Nobody read the book.
Yes.
You saw the senators and congressmen going, hey, did you read it? No.
I tell you, when the Congress was debating whether to give the woman certain time off after birth, okay, It took them almost 6 months to decide on such major issue that affect 50% of our citizens. And it affect our mothers. It affect our daughters. It affect our wives. And yet, they are willing to vote Israel tens of billions of dollars on voice vote that no debate will take place. It takes place in maybe less than 1 or 2 minutes, and nobody dare to show up.
Wow. So that's I would call that a hijacking of the United States government.
It is hijacking every way, man. It's just, okay, you know, you can have a lobby, but for God's sake, you know. I mean, not to blackmail the Congress and not to hijack America. Huh?
Right. Okay? So well, we used to have laws, for example, you remember these laws, you can't control the media, a certain percentage person can only own a percentage of a corporate media giant. Today, we don't have those rules. It's been totally lost. We've lost everything, complete control of the government.
Look, you know, we no longer have a government. Even the Republican candidates, they want to have lesser government because they want to have the private sector takes care of everything. Well, look what happened with Wall Street.
Well, no kidding.
Yeah, they took care
everybody of went broke. You know,
and the taxpayer ended up paying about $1 trillion in bailout.
Yeah, very sad.
When you think about it, well,
you know everybody knows an American family that went broke.
During the Bush days, they were talking about privatizing, or during the Reagan, about privatizing Social Security. Could you imagine what would happen to Social Security if it was entrusted to these goddamn gangs in New York?
Wow. Yeah, no kidding, right? Well, yeah. Look, I'm hoping for a better future. I do have my young family, grandkids, etc. I'm fighting for them. I'm not necessarily fighting for me. I've had my life. I'm getting a little older, and I'm going to fight till the end for their future. I'd like to see a better America, a much better Middle East. And with programs like your Arab Peace Corps and the things that you're doing in terms of voicing out good things, that's part of it. And of course, when you elect me president of the Middle East Union, I think we'll all have all the problems solved.
President of the United States.
I don't know about that.
But really, you know, Johnny, we really have to be committed to America, and we have to do our share, okay,
yes,
to make sure that America is on the right track, that America is the place for its citizens.
Agreed.
This is what we need to make sure in the next election. Okay?
Let's work for that. You know, I will talk America to my family, my people, the people that I influence. I'm going to keep bringing it up every time. Do not let these politicians slide under any circumstances.
Absolutely, absolutely. And we need to put the money out of politics.
Absolutely. Let's get rid of Citizens United. What do you say?
Absolutely. But, you know,
get rid of it.
I tell you, we could not do it in the U.S. Supreme Court, but we can do it at the voting booth.
Yes. So I agree with that. So let's keep working for it, Sammy. I want to thank you for joining me on the Johnny Punish Show. It's been a pleasure having you. Your insights, your experience is really valuable to our listeners. I have a little younger demographic of my listeners, so I really appreciate you sharing your intelligence and experience with our listeners.
Well, Johnny, I really appreciate your invitation, and I thank you very much, and definitely we'll stay in touch with each other, and I'll keep you posted on what's going on.
Absolutely. And we'll be watching. One more thing, Sammy, before you leave. Please tell us all your websites and contact information if anybody's listening so they can find you.
The website for the New Arab Foundation is www.newarabfoundation.org. And you can see the visions of the future and the place for Renaissance. Start there. It's a think tank and a public management company and at the same organization. At the same time, you'll read more about the Arab Peace Corps there too.
Perfect. And I'll be having all that information on the post in the next 24 to 48 hours. So look for it, folks. And it'll be on my Johnny Punish Show page as well. Sammy, you have a fabulous night. Take care of yourself. Keep working hard. And let's work for America. And let's work for a positive Middle East.
Okay. Thanks, my friend. Thanks Bye-bye. A lot. Thanks a lot. Really appreciate it.
Good day, America. From the deserts to the sea, from the mountains to the snow. This concludes today's Johnny Punish Show, produced by the Veterans Today Network and BTN Radio, brought to you by HireVeterans.com, America's job board for U.S. veterans. I'm your host, Johnny Punish. wishing you an amazing day. Until we meet again.
I spent all my years fighting for a place in the sun.